This is the Real BS Show coming back at you after a couple of two, 3 weeks of vacancy.
Yeah, that's right. We've been kind of busy.
Out chasing deer around. That's what I heard. Right.
Yeah. You've been feeding them and I've been chasing them elsewhere.
Yeah, right.
My baby don't mess around because she loves me so, at least I know for sure. But does she really wanna? But can't stand to see me walk out the door. I can't stand to fight the feeling, cause the thought alone is killing me right now. Thank God for mom and dad for sticking two together, cause we don't know how. Got it, oh, you think you got it, but got it, just don't get it till there's nothing at all. We get together, oh, we get together, but separate's always better and there's feelings involved. If what they say that nothing is forever, then what makes, then what makes, then what makes love the exceptions? Why, oh, why, oh, why, oh, why, oh, why, oh, why, are we so in denial when we know we're not?
I just wanted to say, you know, it's getting close to Christmas, so, you know, you start thinking about all these things. And today I had a revelation. A guy came and cut down some trees that are ready to tip over and crush my house.
Right.
And he just was amazing. His name is Aaron Oakes. And boy, I tell you, I'd never seen anything like that in my life. Just an artist with a chainsaw. And he just made them trees drop right where he said.
An artist with the oaks, right?
Oh, yeah. First tree he cut down was an oak tree. But they were really big, because a big one fell down just inside the tree line there, and it went east, and if it would have went south, it would have squashed my house like nothing.
Oh, jeez.
So it was scaring me for weeks now, and he came out and just cleaned them all out.
So he kind of laid your concerns to rest, you know?
Well, that's for sure. Now I can sleep at night, not worry about the... I like to hear the wind, but
right.
It was scaring me because there's like three trees fell down. It just blew them right down, busted them right off. Unreal. Because they cut all the big trees out behind my house and around my house. And so now the wind comes across that. Oh, geez.
And he did it lickety-split.
Yeah. Right? I mean, he was so... what a worker. What a guy. He's like an artist with a chainsaw. I mean, just amazing, amazing. And he didn't charge that much, you know.
Right.
It was amazing. I thought I'd have to help him with the tractor, you know, by pulling on the trees or whatever. Oh, no, he said he'd take care of it. And I says, okay. You know, so I sat and watched him do four or five trees, and then I had to leave. So he just wiped them all out. Just, oh, beautiful job. So I wanted to, that made me think about my different friends, you know. And Seth, you're one of them.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
You take care of me.
Yeah, you're a good guy, man.
And
you deserve it.
Well, I don't know about that, but I just, you know, there's special, the guy that's took it over my son's garage. He's just helped me out, you know, with car things. He just lickety split, boom, done. Hardly wants to charge anything. You have to give more than what they ask for.
Right.
And so I'm really blessed in that department. I got some really good friends. And one of the people I want to say hello to is Nancy Taylor.
Yeah.
She sent me I got a Christmas card yesterday.
She's a sweet.
First one.
She's a sweetheart, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Her husband was our guitar player in a distance band, and he died all of a sudden. And I didn't even think she'd know who I was, but she jumped right up and gave me a hug, and she remembered me, and it was... And she's, you know, a good friend. I talk to her or text her back and forth, you know. And it's a whole different ballgame when she lost her husband, you know.
Well, you definitely.
Pretty lonely, lonely times. But she's got a good daughter that takes care of her, Danica. And so I hope the best for her. I really do. And it's just a whole nother way to live when you're, I guess, kind of lonely, you know. I don't have a lot of friends. I really don't. But that's kind of the way I want it to be.
I kind of like it that way myself because, you know, if you have too many friends, then are they really friends, you know?
Well, when I was the mayor, I had friends up the wazoo.
Oh, sure.
You know, but it was all fake.
Yeah.
You know, it was really fake.
It's kind of when I met you. It was right around the time, you know,
yeah,
you were mayor.
Politics, yeah.
Yeah, I remember, you know, that those times how people were with you. They would be very pleasant to your face.
Oh, geez, you know, yeah. But as soon as I wasn't the mayor anymore, boom, gone.
Yeah, yeah.
Which was okay, you know, because I really didn't, that was the dumbest thing I ever did run for mayor.
Nah, that was cool, Bill.
It was an experience, but it was 4 years of agony.
I think you planted some good seeds, I'll put it that way.
Well, nobody listened to me anyways.
Oh, yeah, I think a few do.
I just argued with everybody.
Yeah.
I called the borough council, I used to call them communist all the time. Every time somebody broke wind in the wrong direction, they wanted to pass a new law. I said, geez, you guys are nuts.
Still how it is.
One guy screws up and you want to penalize the whole community.
You know,
it's just unreal. And that authority goes to their head.
Now they're worried about chicken coops, Bill. You know, the size of chicken coops.
They got to earn their $100 a month. You know?
You have to have a permit. It has to be a certain regulation. It has to have a heater inside of it and, you know, indoor plumbing, you know, for the chickens.
And they probably got a code enforcement guy to go around checking on them.
With a meter stick going out there measuring every centimeter to make sure it's, you know, lined up.
I used to ask them to come over and measure my lawn, see if it was the right height. What a joke. What a joke. I mean, it's just, I don't know. It's crazy. And the whole political thing is the same way, only worse. You know, the Congress and all these people, they're just unbelievable.
Yeah.
And I don't know. They're phony to your face, you know. They'll say whatever you want to hear or whatever makes sense for them. And, you know, but outside of that, they're just money hungry, and I don't know. Some of them want, they just want to be famous, or they want to be, you know, they want to be more important than they really are.
Right.
It's just wild. It's like I say, I have a few friends, you know, Colonel Dave, Colonel Woods up there. He's a good guy. Bob Nye, the science guy. He's mm-hmm. one of his neighbors. He's a good guy. Steve, I like Steve, the yeah. guitar player.
Yeah. Mike Hutzel, he's a good guy too.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know him anymore because he's been gone for 50, 60 yeah. years.
We've been performing with, not performing, but making music with him for the past, what, 3 years now, I think?
Yeah,
I've lost
while.
Track.
It's been a while.
Jeez. That's crazy. You know,
and Gary Taylor was really, really super duty good friend and
yeah.
very humble guy.
Very humble,
I used to tell him I was proud to be doing this with him, and, you know.
He never even mentioned about stuff that he did as a professor, only that he worked at the university, and I only knew because what you told me and a few others that have interviewed him with the radio station, and that's it. I thought he never mentioned that stuff, so he was like super humble about it and was willing to admit he didn't know certain things. And it's like well, first, you don't have to fear anything because, you know, you can learn anything on the internet. But he was a very quick learner. I was actually shocked how quick he was.
Well, he was just a good guy and like you say, humble, you know. He didn't, I said, Gary, I'm proud of you. You know, the third winningest coach in NCAA
right.
Division I history.
Right.
He said, it's no big deal. He says, I don't know. It sounds like a big deal to me. Right. You know, that's
he knows
amazing.
How to do it, you know.
Yeah, he was a good coach, and he, and, you know, affected a lot of younger people, you know. He used to say, you never lose. The only time you lose is if you don't learn anything.
Right.
So, anyways, it's that time of year to count your blessings, I guess. And,
yeah.
And the friends, the real true friends I have, I'm lucky. I'm really lucky to have a, you know, and like I say, I only got a few.
Yeah. Same but, here, man.
But I'm not out shopping for new ones. But every now and then you do run into some quality people, you know.
There's like not that many.
Like that Aaron Oaks. I forgot how tough he was and how good he was, and what a worker. Holy
right.
smokes. And I remember I met his dad some time ago, and what a nice guy. I mean, just a tough guy, workers, you know, really workers. They would ask for anything, they'll work for it, you know. And Aaron, you got a new house, and you're raising your daughter, and he just loves what he does. And I'd recommend anybody that needs tree service to call him, because you can't go wrong. You just
right.
can't go wrong. So before we go that, I was thinking the other day that we could do a show on all the jerks that I met over the years, because of all the sound company business, you know, and all the politicians I met, and all the national acts, thousands of those, you know.
Right.
Some of them really stood out to be just total idiots. I mean, just nasty jerk people, you know. That I said, boy, what a show that would make, you know.
Yeah, that'd be a nice show.
You'd be shocked if I told you some of the people that, how stupid it is. Just total idiots.
You might need to save that for next week and write down the names and see if they're alive or not, because that way they don't sue you for libel or anything.
Yeah, right. Well, most of them are still alive. Well, not all of them.
No.
But there was a lot of good people, too, you know, so you do a show on both directions, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was amazing. It was a real eye-opener being in this sound business and working with these people, because you have to work at least for a day, you know,
right.
to rehearsals and whatnot. And some of the things, some of the way they acted, it just...
I try to be a type of person to be kind. I am not always kind, but I always try to be kind to everybody that I meet. You never know what they're going through. But I can imagine... The entertainment industry brings out the worst in people. It's just a grindy thing. You're constantly touring. You're on a tour bus or a plane, going from city to city, dealing with over saturation with fans screaming at you. And so their importance, their self-importance gets lifted up beyond what it should be. And then on top of it, they are burned out. And I can see that causing people to be nasty people. Oh. And it's like, what if you just removed that, that attention from them and let them live their lives? You know, what if they go work somewhere, that just a, any store? They might straighten up a little bit for a little while.
Go get a job in a foundry or something. Yeah. See how long you last, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a there's something a little bit there. But didn't Dire Straits had a song about that, Money for Nothing, you know?
Yeah, chicks are free.
Yeah,
I mean, it's... It would just, you wouldn't believe how nasty people could be. I mean, you know, these superstars.
Right.
And it's just, I don't know. My favorite line was, they used to ask me, "Are you sure you know what you're doing over here?" I said, "Well, I this is my first job." I said, "But I read the book last night. I stayed up late and I read the book, so I think I got it." You know, they just walk away disgusted. I used to tell him, who was that one guy? Garth Brooks.
I
said, "How about you come over here and you run this stuff and I'll do the singing. I'll sing for you and you do for me, you know?"
Yeah.
just nasty person, nasty.
Yeah.
But that's the way it is, you know. I mean, politician-wise, oh boy, some of them were just unbelievable.
And remember, he has some friends in low places.
I don't know. I don't know nothing about him, and I don't ever want to.
There's a song for that.
The list is really long as far as idiots.
There's a song for that we can play.
What's that?
About country music singers and how they're pandering. You want to? We can do that.
No.
Oh, okay.
I don't know.
We'll save that. We'll save that for next week.
Yeah,
then.
We'll do that another day.
Yeah.
I don't know. Can I get sued for telling the truisms?
It's your opinion. That's how you can word it. Saying
it's not
this
my
is,
opinion. It's real life. I experienced it.
Well, yeah, you can say this as a
this
disclaimer.
This is what happened to me.
You can say this as a disclaimer. This is my opinion, my viewpoint of what happened. Then you're kind of excused, you know. And it's also for entertainment purposes. It's not, you know.
Well, it's to.
I'm just being legal, Bill.
You know, it's like that. what was that one thing I was looking at? The smokers, famous smokers,
yeah,
and the famous alcoholics, the famous people that were total alcoholics,
right? Fifty worst alcoholics,
they pretty much killed themselves with alcohol.
Yeah.
And same way with smoking. There's, you know, Jackie Kennedy.
Yeah, both of those two things are addictions. Yeah,
Jackie Kennedy, 3 packs a day.
Yeah,
and she hit it. I mean, she really hit it, but.
And back then, it was taboo for a woman to smoke in public, so they did it privately. So that means she was smoking a lot in private.
Yeah, yeah. That's why you didn't see her as much as, you know, if you think back about it, she stayed pretty much in the background, you know.
Right.
And she did what?
Well, you know, Jack was out front, you know, and he was seeing other women, and she stayed in the back, you know, stayed in the kitchen.
Yeah, it's... There's that, you know, alcohol wise, you'd be shocked.
Do you think she was ever happy?
I don't know.
Because, I mean,
it's hard to say.
She got remarried and everything, and it's like, I'm sure she loved her husband, the first husband.
She married that guy that had those boats, the big giant.
Give her
boats.
Protection, yeah.
Onassis?
Yeah.
I don't know. He looked like a werewolf to me. I don't know. But
and then for her son to die in a plane crash, that's just so tragic.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that whole Kennedy family, Robert Kennedy, not Jr., but just Robert Kennedy.
Yeah, he got assassinated,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, he got assassinated. You know, and John Kennedy and Robert Kennedy, I don't know. It's like
there's
the CIA
ones.
Got back at him, you know.
And there's a lot of, they also were involved in the mob, you know. I mean, their father was, he was hired by FDR to close the loopholes that... the senior Kennedy was using. So he closed the door on the things he did, made money to make his son, his family wealthy.
Well, the mafia got him elected in Illinois.
Yeah.
I mean, they went all out and he won Illinois.
Yeah, in Chicago,
It was close and he won the election from Nixon. But the mafia, and then he sixed Robert Kennedy on Jimmy Hoffa and a whole bunch of those guys, and boy, were they mad. They were really upset. And That's part of the reason John F. Kennedy didn't last very long. You know, I don't care what they say about Oswald, but the CIA and the CIA and the mobsters definitely made a big
hand. There was definitely a lot there going on, and it's something it's not been fully released with every president so far. Like, for instance, Trump was supposed to release those documents.
Yeah, he did.
And he didn't. And then Biden is not doing. Obama was supposed to do it beforehand. And Bush Jr. was supposed to do it beforehand. And everyone's kicked it to the next president.
Yeah, for so a reason. There's a reason.
There's something in there. Yeah. And some of the ones that I've seen, there's a document that I've seen that was talking about, did the CIA know about Oswald? And it just trailed off with black lines. And so I can imagine there's a lot more involved than people realize.
Oh, sure.
I personally think Oswald did it alone with maybe some assistance from the Cuban government or Mexican government, because Oswald was a communist, and Kennedy was against communism. But, you know, hey, what do you do? You know?
Oswald, he was all over the map. I mean, he was working for all kinds of guys, CIA down there, mobsters in New Orleans.
The other thing too is the Soviet Union didn't even trust him. Didn't trust him with a single thing. They thought he wasn't that intelligent, and so they wanted him to go back to the United States because they didn't find him useful.
Yeah,
and so there's some truth there, because I mean, when it happened, you know, when the assassination happened, the Soviet Union was freaked out. It was not us. We did not promote this at all.
Yeah, there's too many empty answers there that just nothing lines up. Nothing. I mean, it just there's no way that Oswald did that by himself.
I think he had assistance, and the shots that he did, the way he was able to do them, it's been recreated by different people. In the time slot that he was able to rack another round in, two rounds in, because he had ready one in, and then he did another two. And there's been people that have been able to do it under 4 seconds, and he did it in 6.5 or something like that, or 8 seconds. Well, it's definitely possible.
If you see that Zapruder film.
Yep. Yeah.
I mean, Kennedy's head went backwards. It didn't go forward. It took the whole side of his head off.
In that regard, I can speak about this, because not only was I in the Army infantry, but also I hunt. When you shoot something, it does have a recoil. So you could shoot something, and it can bounce a little bit that way and then come back. And
I mean, the top of his head went onto the trunk of the car.
Yeah, yeah.
Backwards.
Yeah.
And his wife was out there trying to catch it.
She was trying to catch the brain particles, yeah. We won't get too gross.
Yeah, right.
We're
getting off topic.
We could get real deep about that, you know, about, yeah.
Let's run a, you want to run a thing about the alcoholics?
Yeah, yeah.
Let's, you know, there'll be a lot of old people in there that you might not recognize, you know, Errol Flynn and W.C. Fields and all these people, but they definitely really took it to the limit, and it got them all, really.
Right, right.
Okay, well, let's do that.
Yeah.
And we'll come back and, I don't know, talk about something joyful.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, thanks, Nancy, and thanks, Aaron, for all your help, and thanks for being my friends.
Say Pakistan at $110 and triple your money. Providing, of course, you have the facilities for melting it down.
The old stars of Hollywood drank heavily at swanky parties every night, drank when they were on set, and even drank when they drove. Vote now for your favorite out of the 50 worst alcoholics in Hollywood history as we share their shocking tales. Fame, fortune, and a bottle. It's a story you won't want to miss. Number 1. Gig Young. Tragic circumstances led Academy Award-winning actor Gig Young to a harrowing end. On October 19, 1978, Young, aged 64, pointed a .38 caliber snub-nosed revolver at his wife's head and pulled the trigger, ending her life in an instant. He then turned the gun on himself, committing suicide. Married for only 3 weeks, their deaths were shrouded in mystery. A possible suicide pact, or a murder-suicide. Gig Young's acting prowess shone when he won an Oscar for Best Supporting Actor in the film They Shoot Horses, Don't They? As a heartless dance MC. His career, however, succumbed to alcohol and pill abuse. He was hooked on the tranquilizer Valium, taking 7 pills a day, washing them down with booze. With a .38 caliber bullet, it all ended in Suite 1BB of the Osborne Apartments on West 57th Street in New York City. Number 2. Peter O'Toole. Peter O'Toole, renowned for his iconic performances and piercing blue eyes, had a notorious relationship with alcohol. Among the colorful anecdotes, the infamous tale stands out that he once attended the wrong funeral, drunk, while intending to pay respects to a friend. O'Toole openly acknowledged that his generation embraced drinking as a norm, claiming it enhanced his acting on screen. During the filming of Lawrence of Arabia, he and co-star Omar Sharif conquered their fear of camels by remaining inebriated for a camel raid scene. O'Toole's 8 Academy Award nominations and celebrated roles masked his tumultuous personal life marred by excessive drinking. Throughout his career, O'Toole's escapades were legendary, from Beirut drinking sprees during Lawrence of Arabia's filming to being drunk throughout Beckett's production. He humorously recounted waking up in Corsica after a supposed pub visit in Paris. His excessive drinking endured until health concerns forced him to quit, but the damage was already done. O'Toole's once handsome looks withered, and he died in a London hospital, ravaged by years of drinking and chain smoking. Number 3. W.C. Fields. W.C. Fields, renowned for his comedic genius, had an equally legendary relationship with alcohol. He famously quipped, "I never drink water. I'm afraid it will become habit-forming." Fields displayed unwavering discipline in his alcohol consumption, stating, quote, "I have never imbibed while sleeping, and I drink nothing stronger than gin before breakfast." Born above a bar prior to Prohibition, Fields stocked his attic with thousands of bottles of whiskey and gin in preparation. Even after Prohibition's end, he maintained a sizable emergency alcohol stash, telling Harpo Marx it was a precaution against his return. A classic story involves Fields carrying a vacuum flask on set filled with gin martinis, humorously referred to as his lemonade or pineapple juice. On one occasion, mischievous colleagues switched the contents to actual lemonade, prompting Fields' outcry, quote, "Who put lemonade in my lemonade?"
Ha ha, I forgot to take the cellophane off.
Number 4. Errol Flynn. Celebrated as a swashbuckling hero on screen, Errol Flynn led a life of excess and debauchery off screen. He famously carried vodka to film sets, even injecting it into oranges for a discreet daytime indulgence. Flynn's notorious womanizing, brawling, cocaine use, and love of alcohol were legendary. His Malibu bachelor pad with David Niven was nicknamed Cirrhosis by the Sea. Flynn's escapades extended to parties on his private boat, fueled by sex, alcohol, and cocaine. He once drunkenly wagered $500 that he could bet his co-star, Olivia de Havilland. Despite warnings about his health, Flynn's excessive lifestyle led to his early demise at the age of 50 due to a heart attack, cirrhosis, and bloated body, and he was buried with 6 bottles of whiskey. Notable actions included getting rum drunk with Fidel Castro and having the Warner Lot Bar shut down due to his onset drunkenness. Flynn's daily medicine included 2/5 of vodka in his doctor's bag. He consumed Bloody Marys to mask his alcohol scent and snacked on vodka-infused oranges. His life was a combination of wild parties, substance abuse, and reckless behavior. Number 5. Richard Harris. Renowned Irish actor Richard Harris was a member of the legendary O'Toole, Burton, Oliver Reed circle, known for his remarkable talent and his tumultuous relationship with alcohol. His teenage escapades, including crashing his father's delivery truck into a bridge after a pub visit, raising the structure of its supports. Achieving fame on both stage and screen, Harris indulged in a lavish lifestyle, embracing alcohol and pursuing romantic interests. His alcohol intake escalated, with a reported consumption of up to 2.5 bottles of vodka daily. Harris's exploits included being found lying on the street, telling a policeman that he was waiting for his house to go by. He shielded his children from his darker side, seeking to make life seem fun even amidst his own struggles. Amidst intense performances in films like The Sporting Life and A Man Called Horse, Harris was known for his wild mood swings and passionate performances. He balanced his public persona with a private struggle, often masking his inner turmoil. Harris's son Jared recalled an adventurous trip to Dublin, where his father's spontaneous nature led to extended pub visits and impromptu gatherings, extending a one-day trip into four. Number 6. Oliver Reed. Oliver Reed, a prominent English actor of the late 60s and early 70s, captivated audiences with his performances in iconic films like Oliver, The Trap, and the Three Musketeers series. While celebrated on screen, Reed's off-screen behavior was notorious for his excessive drinking and wild antics. He once confessed that he, quote, did not live in the world of sobriety. Fellow actor and producer David Hemmings claimed that Reed could, quote, drink 20 pints of lager with a gin or creme de menthe chaser and still run a mile for a wager, end quote. And that he once drank 126 pints of beer in 24 hours and then performed a horizontal handstand on the bar. Reed's drunken escapades often led to chaos, violence, and scandalous behavior. He exhibited erratic conduct, such as pretending to play rugby with a baby during a christening and exposing his tattooed penis in public, bringing attention to it as his, quote, mighty mallet. His audacious stunts included climbing a chimney naked and urinating on a national flag. Tragically, Reed's life was cut short while filming Gladiator. He went to a pub one night and drank 8 bottles of beer, 3 bottles of rum, and a few shots of whiskey, before finally suffering a heart attack and dying shortly thereafter. Looking back at his fascinating life, Reed often claimed that he had just one regret, which was that he, quote, didn't drink every pub dry and sleep with every woman on the planet, end quote.
I died in a bar of a heart attack, full of laughter, and we were having a cabbage competition.
Number 7. Richard Burton. Richard Burton, a renowned actor known for his exceptional talent and tumultuous love affair with Elizabeth Taylor, battled alcoholism throughout his life. He reportedly began drinking at a young age and struggled with heavy alcohol consumption until his death. He once told a director, quote, I'm not drinking on your film, end quote. Only problem was, that meant 1 bottle of vodka for the day. Burton stated that he was sober even while on 2 bottles. But when he was drinking, it was 3 or more. At the peak of his alcoholism, Burton would consume 2 to 3 bottles of vodka daily, earning a reputation in Hollywood for his excessive drinking. Despite his drinking habits, Burton delivered remarkable performances, including his iconic role in Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf, for which he received an Oscar nomination. Burton's addiction took a toll on his health and career. During the filming of The Klansman in 1974, his alcoholism was evident as he struggled to maintain his balance on set. His ongoing battle with alcohol led him to check into rehab to seek treatment and sobriety. However, years of heavy drinking had already caused significant damage to his health, resulting in cirrhosis of the liver and kidney disease. Burton tragically passed away in 1984 at the age of 58. Number 8. Humphrey Bogart. Humphrey Bogart, celebrated as one of the greatest male actors in American cinema history, had a notorious reputation for his drinking habits. In one of his drinking stories, he and the director of The African Queen didn't get sick from contaminated water because they were drinking whiskey, while the rest of the crew was drinking water. Despite his iconic roles in films like Casablanca, The Maltese Falcon, and The African Queen, Bogart's personal life was marked by heavy drinking. He often displayed a charming demeanor until late in the evening, when he would transform into a more irritable and abrasive version of himself. This behavior affected his work, leading to instances of showing up on the set drunk or hungover, even wearing pajamas and riding a bicycle around the studio. Offset, his drinking escapades were equally wild, including getting banned from various establishments and even facing legal troubles for his altercations. His love of alcohol and smoking contributed to health issues, including his battle with cancer, which ultimately claimed his life in 1957.
I'll answer all questions right here and now.
Did you conduct such a search?
Yes, I did.
Number 9. Frank Sinatra. Frank Sinatra, the legendary singer and entertainer, was known for his daily consumption of a bottle of Jack Daniel's whiskey, a habit he maintained until he was 80 years old. His signature drink was a precise mix of 4 ice cubes, 2 fingers of Jack, and a splash of water in a traditional rocks glass. Sinatra lived in the spotlight wherever he went. I guess you could say that he lived by the mantra, "The best is yet to come." But this was not always the case. Sinatra could turn mean when he was drunk, leading to fights with journalists or colleagues. Dubbed the American Olympic Drinking Team alongside Hollywood elites, Sinatra's complex relationship with alcohol was a notable aspect of his life. He passed away in 1998 at age 82, buried with a bottle of Jack Daniel's in his casket. Number 10. Clara Bow. Clara Bow, the iconic It Girl of the silent film era, was the subject of numerous scandalous stories that sometimes blurred the line between fact and fiction. While some of the more extreme allegations surrounding her were false, there were elements of truth to the wild stories about her unconventional lifestyle. As a representative figure of the flapper era, Bow embraced a partying lifestyle and was often seen at bars, engaging in relationships with various men, some of whom were married. One of the more credible stories about Bow's behavior was when Paramount President B.P. Schulberg invited her to a party celebrating a recently appointed judge. She arrived at the party already drunk and proceeded to introduce herself to the judge by aggressively French kissing him in front of his wife, then dancing with him until she was unceremoniously escorted off the premises by studio personnel. Number 11. Elizabeth Taylor. Renowned for her beauty and acting prowess, Elizabeth Taylor also battled alcoholism and painkiller addiction for many years. In a significant step, she became the first celebrity to voluntarily enter the Betty Ford Center for Treatment in 1983. Her decision to seek help mirrored Betty Ford's own journey to recovery, after which the former First Lady established the center to aid others. Taylor's openness about her struggles inspired countless individuals silently dealing with their own addictions. Her courageous choice not only transformed the perception of residential treatment, but also paved the way for her to become a dedicated advocate for AIDS awareness, prevention, and research.
But, we're friends.
Number 12. John Barrymore. John Barrymore, a distinguished actor from the renowned Barrymore acting dynasty, began drinking at the young age of 14, and his alcoholism grew progressively worse over time. By the 1930s, his reputation suffered, leading to his being blacklisted by major studios. Despite being acclaimed for his Shakespearean performances and notable roles like Mr. Hyde and Sherlock Holmes, his personal struggles, tragic past, and later years deteriorated into heavy drinking. His career suffered, and by 1936, he required cue cards due to his failing memory from alcohol's impact. Barrymore's health declined, marked by cirrhosis, kidney disease, and chronic edema. He passed away in 1942 at the age of 60. Number 13. Marie Prévost. Marie Prévost, a Canadian-American actress, tragically passed away on January 21, 1937, at the age of 40, due to acute alcoholism. Her body was discovered on January 23 after her dog's barking prompted concerns from neighbors. Empty liquor bottles were found in her room, along with a promissory note to Joan Crawford. Her funeral, attended by Hollywood figures like Joan Crawford, Clark Gable, and Barbara Stanwyck, was paid for by Crawford. Marie Prévost's estate was valued at $300, and her story contributed to the establishment of the motion picture and television Country House and Hospital. Number 14. Ethel Barrymore. Ethel Barrymore, a prominent member of the legendary Barrymore acting family, had her own battle with alcohol. Despite her immense talent and success on both stage and screen, Ethel struggled with drinking at an early age. However, by the late 1930s, she managed to overcome her alcohol problem and became a teetotaler, avoiding alcohol altogether. Known as the First Lady of the American Theater, Barrymore had a career that spanned 6 decades, and she made significant contributions to both Broadway and the West End. While alcohol initially posed a challenge for her, she was able to regain control of her life and ultimately became a teetotaler in her 30s. In her words, quote, "No one in my family should drink because it's poisonous to us." Number 15. Tallulah Bankhead. Tallulah Bankhead, the renowned actress known for her wit and partying lifestyle, had a notorious reputation for heavy substance abuse. She was known to mix alcohol with cocaine, various pills, and other drugs. In her last years, she consumed over a quart of bourbon per day, along with a cocktail of pills, both legal and illegal, and cocaine. Her last words, quote, "Codeine, bourbon, reveal her drug addiction." Born into a well-off family, Bankhead pursued acting and became a prominent figure on both Broadway and in film. Her time at the Algonquin Hotel in New York introduced her to a circle of heavy drinkers, including the Algonquin Roundtable members. Over the years, her substance abuse escalated, leading to a decline in both her health and appearance.
Why not live a little?
Number 16. Paul Lynde. Paul Lynde, known for his roles on Bewitched and as a center square on Hollywood Squares, had a lively and witty persona on screen. However, behind the scenes, his life was marred by struggles with alcohol and the challenges he faced as a gay man in Hollywood during a less accepting time. Due to his drinking problem, he often got into trouble in underground gay bars, including getting thrown out of bars, harassing police officers, and, most shockingly, spewing racial slurs drunkenly during his alma mater's homecoming weekend, leading to a police chase. After getting involved in a drunken police chase that later led to a DUI, Lynde is reported to have rolled down his window and drawled to the officer in his distinctive lisp, quote, "I'll have a double cheeseburger and a chocolate shake." His battle with alcohol took a toll on his health, and he tragically passed away at the age of 55 due to alcohol-induced damage to his heart. Number 17. Montgomery Clift. A talented method actor, he struggled with alcohol addiction for many years. Clift's heavy drinking was reportedly linked to the challenges he faced as a homosexual in an era when such matters were not openly discussed. Despite his struggles, he found a friend and confidant in Elizabeth Taylor, who stood by him and supported him throughout. Clift's alcoholism and depression took a toll on his health, and in a tragic turn of events, he was involved in a car accident after leaving a dinner party at Taylor's house. He and Taylor were once called the most beautiful couple in Hollywood. The accident marred his handsome face and added to his troubles. Despite his personal battles, Clift continued to work in the film industry, even receiving an Oscar nomination for his performance in Judgment at Nuremberg. However, his addiction and health issues ultimately led to his untimely death at the age of 45. Number 18. Orson Welles. Orson Welles, a legendary figure in the world of cinema and theater, was also known for his complicated relationship with alcohol. His fondness for drinking was influenced by his father's alcoholism and the guilt he felt over their strained relationship. This guilt paradoxically contributed to his own struggles with alcohol. Welles famously endorsed the Negroni cocktail while working in Rome on the film Black Magic, claiming its ingredients balanced each other out, bitters for the liver and gin for the harm. His endorsement led to a surge in the cocktail's popularity. As his drinking habits grew, so did his weight. Welles grew to nearly 400 pounds and eventually became the spokesperson for various alcohol brands. Number 19. Larry Hagman. Larry Hagman, renowned for his portrayal of the iconic character J.R. Ewing on the TV series Dallas, battled a severe addiction to alcohol that ultimately played a significant role in his health issues and tragic demise. His excessive alcohol consumption, which at times reached up to 5 bottles of champagne a day, led to end-stage cirrhotic liver disease, a condition that substantially increased his risk of developing cancer. Hagman once said in an interview, quote, "In the heyday of Dallas, it got to the point where I showed up for work about 6:30 in the morning, and by around 9 a.m., I might have opened a bottle of champagne, which I would nurse until about noon." After undergoing a 16-hour liver transplant in 1995, Hagman nearly died due to the damage caused by years of alcoholism. Sadly, Hagman passed away in November 2012 from complications of acute myeloid leukemia. Number 20, Barbara Lee Payton. Barbara Lee Payton, a former Hollywood starlet known for her appearances alongside iconic actors like James Cagney and Gary Cooper, lost her life to a tragic downfall due to alcoholism. Despite her initial rise to fame, Payton's personal life was plagued by tumultuous relationships, run-ins with the law, shoplifting, and prostitution. Throughout the 1960s, her battle with alcoholism intensified, leading to a downward spiral. After losing custody of her son and facing numerous legal issues, Payton's health deteriorated rapidly. She was found dead at the age of 39, her heart and liver failing due to years of alcohol abuse. Number 21, Anne Margaret. Anne Margaret is known as one of the original sex kittens and as a gal who knew how to have a good time. In 1970, while filming RPM, she struggled with full-blown alcoholism, initially because she was anxious about nude scenes. Her affair with Elvis Presley, marked by relentless partying, also played a role. By 1971, she was incapable of, quote, separating fantasy from reality, as she later wrote. Quote, I'd drink a fifth of scotch, pass out, wake up, drink some more, and pass out again. However, in 1980, she made the decision to quit drinking for good, and her candid recovery journey is detailed in her autobiography, My Story. Her resolve to stay sober was evident when, during a 1982 interview, she amusingly declined a cocktail, stating, quote, I don't drink, but I do the hoochie-coo. Number 22, Dean Martin. Known as the King of Cool, Dean Martin was famous for his charismatic persona, often associated with being a lovable drunk. He humorously remarked about feeling sorry for those who didn't drink, suggesting that the morning was the best they'd feel all day. While much of his onstage image portrayed him as a drinker, those close to him, including his daughter, have indicated that it was mostly an act, and he often had apple juice in his glass. Despite his stage presence, Martin was a dedicated family man who enjoyed a single cocktail with his wife during the evening. He managed to balance his career and personal life, passing away in 1995 at the age of 78. Number 23, Alan Ladd. Alan Ladd was a renowned movie actor, famous for his roles in films like Shane, 1953. Despite his success, he faced various challenges, including health issues and accidents. During a football game with his son, he injured his hand and it became infected. He developed gangrene and almost had to have his hand amputated. He developed coping mechanisms using sedatives and alcohol to manage pain and insomnia. Unfortunately, Ladd's struggles took a tragic turn. He suffered a self-inflicted gunshot wound in 1962, claiming it was accidental. However, in 1964, he was found dead from an overdose of sedatives and alcohol at the age of just 50. Number 24, Gail Russell. When she turned into a stunning teenager, Paramount saw potential in her, even though she lacked formal training and seemed shy. As her personal life grew complicated, so did her struggles with alcohol. By 1952, her movie career stagnated and she faced issues with alcoholism. After a number of drunk driving arrests, she entered a sanitarium in Seattle for treatment. A brief return to acting followed, but her battles with alcoholism persisted. Tragically, she passed away in 1961, with acute and chronic alcoholism cited as the cause. Quote, there was always a sense of pressure, no time to think or relax, Russell once said about her life as a movie star. I just wanted to be alone to take stock, and it wasn't possible. Film work was just too demanding. Number 25. John Wayne. The legendary John Wayne, known for his tough cowboy roles, had a hidden side that not everyone saw. Despite his reputation as a professional on set, there was more to the story. Movie stars of his era were treated like royalty, and Wayne was no exception. He had his quirks, He insisted on filming scenes before noon because his temperament took a sour turn in the afternoon after a few drinks. Wayne had a reputation for being a mean drunk, a side that colleagues who worked closely with him knew well. Unusual as this may sound, filming sometimes had to wait until Wayne had his morning bowel movement. In those times, drinking without considering hydration might have affected his digestion, making his mornings tougher. His love for booze had its impact, even on his work routine. Number 26. Robert Mitchum. Robert Mitchum, far from the typical leading man, was known for his dark and brooding aura. His battles with alcohol often led to chaos. During the filming of His Kind of Woman, Mitchum's alcohol-fueled behavior escalated into a real brawl with stuntmen as he forgot he was acting and attacked them for real. His penchant for excess didn't stop there. Working on Not as a Stranger, he described the cast as more of a brewery, with drinking commencing in the morning and wild parties lasting through the night. A mishap during the filming of River of No Return revealed Mitchum's reputation. Director Otto Preminger permitted an actor to bring vodka to Mitchum, but not to others. Number 27. Broderick Crawford. Broderick Crawford, known for his role on the TV series Highway Patrol, faced a dual struggle: the pressures of a weekly TV series and a steadily worsening drinking problem. His alcohol dependence escalated during the show's filming, leading to numerous arrests and DUI incidents. Ironically, he mirrored his character's law enforcement role by accumulating DUIs in real life. His intoxicated state even influenced his acting, with scenes designed around his inability to stand upright. Crawford's heavy drinking earned him the inglorious nickname Old 502, referencing the police radio code for drunk driving. His alcohol dependency created tension with both the show's production company and the California Highway Patrol.
Yeah, that's right. You know, I was making those Highway Patrol shows long before you guys were born.
Number 28. Spencer Tracy. The Hollywood legend Spencer Tracy was as notorious for his bar brawls as he was for his acting prowess. Fox Studios confronted his drinking head-on, demanding him to quit drinking or face the axe. Spencer chose defiance and was swiftly embraced by MGM. A specialized team named the Tracy Squad was established to manage his alcohol-fueled escapades. His inebriated state was anything but jovial. Tracy's drinking transformed him into a mean and combative presence. As soon as an ambulance was called, a doctor and several security guards would grab Tracy and whisk him away to somewhere out of the public's view where he could sober up. Every bar in a 25-mile radius was given their number. Hotel room seclusions would find him submerged in booze, barely leaving the bathtub. Number 29. Sterling Hayden. Whether it was the Hollywood scandal or being named during the House Un-American Activities Committee hearings, he harbored regrets and pride in equal measure. Apparently, he was also an extremely heavy drinker, at least at the time the film was made. Mr. Hayden spent several long afternoons in rambling conversation with the filmmakers, drinking wine and evidently smoking hashish all the while. Mr. Hayden sounded apologetic about his drinking and somewhat bewildered by it. Quote, "What confuses me, if you'll excuse me," he said, "is that I ain't all that unhappy. So why do I drink? I don't know," end quote. One morning, he described having fallen into the canal the night before and very nearly drowning before being rescued by the son who lived with him. Number 30. Judy Garland. Judy Garland, renowned for her iconic role as Dorothy in The Wizard of Oz, was a brilliant actress whose career was tragically cut short at just 47. In 1935, her father's sudden death left a void that strained her relationship with her mother. Garland's ascent to stardom at MGM brought success, but she also had the burden of pills supplied to her even at the tender age of 10. Battling a whirlwind of pills, diets, and a demanding schedule during the filming of The Wizard of Oz, Garland's life grew increasingly unstable. Despite multiple marriages, her struggles persisted. In 1969, her story ended in tragedy. It was Mickey Deans, her fifth husband, who discovered her lifeless body, a victim of her battle with alcohol and barbiturates. Number 31, Rita Hayworth. In the late 1970s, headlines revealed a distressing truth about the Hollywood icon Rita Hayworth. Struggling with alcoholism, she found herself in the spotlight for her personal battles. Reports detailed her hospitalization at Hogue Hospital in Newport Beach, a situation where she couldn't provide consent for treatment due to her condition. Alone and grappling with her demons, Hayworth's vulnerability was palpable. A fan and artist and a chance encounter at a country club led to a brief friendship. Recognizing her struggle, he extended his support, inviting her to Newport Beach for respite. After leaving home for a short time, he returned to find Hayworth barricaded inside and in need of rescue. He found Hayworth hiding in a closet and made sure she received professional help at Hogue Hospital. This was the last time he would see her.
When marimba rhythms start to play, dance with me.
Number 32, Albert Finney. The charismatic English actor Albert Finney's on-screen energy was matched by his wild off-screen life, one that involved heavy drinking. He once said, quote, "I used to drink a lot. I mean a lot. I'd go out at lunchtime and have 3 or 4 pints, that kind of thing. It was fun at the time, but now I look back and think, how did I do that?" End quote. In 1984, a diagnosis of kidney cancer became a turning point. In the end, he was victorious, overcoming both his illness and his addiction to alcohol. His vibrant career continued until 2012, a testament to his resilience and talent. The world bid farewell to this legendary actor in 2019 at the age of 82. Number 33, Robin Williams. The comedic genius Robin Williams had a complex relationship with substances. In the early years of his career, he struggled with cocaine and alcohol abuse, which ended tragically with the death of his friend John Belushi. Williams's rocky journey with alcohol persisted, interwoven with his life, even making its way into his comedic routines. In a 2006 interview with Diane Sawyer, Williams talked about the reality that drinking doesn't always have a reason behind it, saying, quote, "It's not caused by anything, it's just there. It waits. It lays in wait for the time when you think, it's fine now, I'm okay. Then, the next thing you know, it's not okay. Then you realize, where am I? I didn't realize I was in Cleveland." End quote. Despite his efforts, the battle proved overwhelming, and in 2014, the world lost a brilliant star. Number 34, Mary Astor. The life of Mary Astor was filled with triumphs and hardships, beyond the glamour of the silver screen. Her acting legacy includes iconic roles in The Maltese Falcon and The Great Lie, earning her an Oscar. She had a scandalous divorce and custody battle with her second husband, Franklin Thorpe, who used her diary to prove her affairs. Astor, haunted by stress and insecurity, turned to alcohol, spiraling into a 20-year battle with alcoholism that began in the 1930s, as recorded in her diary. In 1949, a desperate suicide attempt and a nervous breakdown led her to an alcoholics sanitarium. There, she found solace in Alcoholics Anonymous and faith, eventually reclaiming her life. She continued to act in movies and TV shows until the 1960s, and she also wrote novels and memoirs.
Thank you.
Number 35, Lon Chaney Jr. As a screen legend, Lon Chaney Jr. battled depression and alcoholism. Alcohol took its toll, leading to health issues like cancer and liver disease. He hit rock bottom, attempting suicide after the rap of Abbott and Costello Meet Frankenstein. It was not just on set that he was mischievous. His attempts to intoxicate Marion Davies led him to be banished from William Randolph Hearst's mansion. In a live TV show, he was accused of being drunk, but some defended his performance as professional. His dressing room was shared with Broderick Crawford, and they would get drunk together and fight. Number 36, Ava Gardner. So who was Ava Gardner? hard partying, foul-mouthed, wisecracking, and an iconically beautiful star, she stood out as one of the 50s and 60s biggest celebrities, often in the company of famous names like Frank Sinatra, Salvador Dali, and Tennessee Williams. Alcohol was her trusty companion, unlocking inhibitions and fueling her passionate escapades, from wild parties to bullfights. On the set of Night of the Iguana, Gardner refused to film a night scene, saying, quote, "I feel like drinking instead." So director John Huston drank tequila shots with her until she became convinced that he was too drunk to direct. Her spirit was undeniable, but it was cigarettes, not booze, that ultimately took her life. Number 37. Leonard Nimoy. The iconic Mr. Spock, played by Leonard Nimoy, was grappling with a hidden battle behind his composed on-screen persona. Nimoy battled alcohol addiction while filming Star Trek, using it as a coping mechanism for the demanding days on set. William Shatner, his co-star, mentioned that Nimoy turned to drinking to numb the challenges of stardom. The initial enjoyment spiraled into an uncontrollable addiction, one drink turning into two. After the show ended, Nimoy sought help and entered rehab. He triumphed over alcoholism, but his struggle with smoking ultimately led to his death at the age of 83. Number 38. Bela Lugosi. Famous horror star Bela Lugosi's later years were marked by a harrowing battle with morphine addiction and alcoholism. A director, Ed Wood, who had worked with him, recounted a chilling incident. Lugosi, hidden behind a curtain, emerged with tears streaming down his face and a gun aimed at Wood. "Eddie, I'm going to die tonight," he said. "I want to take you with me." Understanding his desperation, Wood offered Lugosi his favorite drink, a Boilermaker. The gesture worked. The gun was set aside, and Lugosi drank himself to sleep. Number 39. William Holden. He struggled with a lifetime battle with alcoholism. The toll of years of drinking began to show on his once chiseled looks in the 1960s. Losing roles to younger stars like Steve McQueen and Paul Newman further fueled his drinking. In 1981, his life came to a tragic end in his Santa Monica apartment. Found alone on the floor, he had suffered a head injury, likely from a fall while trying to dress himself. On the scene, they found an empty vodka bottle in the trash can, along with four beer bottles and a partially full bottle of vodka. There was a large quantity of blood surrounding the body, as well as all over the bedding and blankets. From the condition of his body, it was decided that he had been dead for at least 4 days. William Holden was only 63 years old. Number 40. Bernard Lee. A seasoned actor with a prolific career spanning 5 decades and over 100 films, Bernard Lee struggled with personal tragedies and demons throughout his life. The loss of his wife in a heart-wrenching house fire and a brutal mugging pushed him into a downward spiral of depression and alcoholism. Even while filming the Edgar Wallace TV series, his addiction was so consuming that he was locked in his dressing room during breaks, but still hired a person to snake a straw through the keyhole and managed to bypass the barrier. As a fellow drinker, Richard Burton acknowledged Lee's prowess, admitting he couldn't compete with Lee's drinking ability. Number 41. Carrie Fisher. Beyond the iconic buns and blasters of Princess Leia, Carrie Fisher openly shared her battle with addiction. In her candid memoir, Wishful Drinking, she wrote, "Happy is one of the many things I'm likely to be over the course of a day, and certainly over the course of a lifetime. But I think if you have the expectation that you're going to be happy throughout your life, more to the point, if you have a need to be comfortable all the time, well, among other things, you have the makings of a classic drug addict or alcoholic." Number 42. Drew Barrymore. As a young girl, she was exposed to the world of glitz and glamour. Cocaine's grip led her into rehab at just 14. Despite her allure in the spotlight, alcohol became her constant enemy. Drew candidly shared her struggles, acknowledging the relentless cycle of battling a force she believed she couldn't conquer. She said, quote, "The drinking thing for me was a constant, like, you cannot change. You are weak and incapable of doing what's best for you. You keep thinking you will master this thing, and it's getting the better of you. End quote. Number 43, Glenn Ford. He shared a one-night stand with Marilyn Monroe, a fling with Judy Garland lasting half a year, and a 40-year on-and-off affair with the enchanting Rita Hayworth. Following a 16-year marriage to Eleanor Powell, a celebrated dancer, Ford embarked on a string of marriages in pursuit of increasingly younger companions. These unions often ended with his wealth plundered and him feeling heartbroken. Amidst this tumult, a severe drinking problem emerged, threatening his life and mobility. Despite his battles, Ford's charm endured until he passed away in 2006 at the remarkable age of 90.
Well, maybe you take me out with you next time you go and show me some of the ropes.
Yeah, I might just do that.
Number 44, Robert Shaw. The treacherous waters of Jaws weren't the only challenge on set. Behind the scenes, Robert Shaw, the man who brought Quint to life, was battling his own tempest. He turned to scotch to weather the long filming days, creating tension with co-star Richard Dreyfuss. Shaw's character might have sought a drink, but his on-set alcoholism reached a tipping point. Dreyfuss admitted he preferred Shaw sober, finding his drunken demeanor less than agreeable. In a moment that could have come straight from the movie, Dreyfuss actually took a glass of booze out of Shaw's hand and dumped it overboard into the ocean. Number 45, Anthony Hopkins. It's a story of triumph and inspiration. Academy Award winner Anthony Hopkins, the man who's brought legendary characters to life on screen, has had his own real-life battle to conquer. In a heartfelt Instagram video, he opened up about his remarkable journey. With humility, he marked 47 years of sobriety, a testament to his strength and resilience. He spoke directly to those facing their own struggles, urging kindness and self-pride. He shared his darkest days, moments when he didn't expect to make it. But make it he did. Quote, "It was a kind of mental, physical condition called alcoholism. Addiction," he said. Number 46, Michael Landon. The TV icon battled his own demons, namely alcohol and Valium. While he played the picture-perfect family man, he was spiking his coffee with whiskey and his soda with vodka, like a caffeine-fueled secret party. His co-stars had a hunch, but the full extent of his boozing was a surprise. After filming, the bar was his next destination. Landon's TV daughter, Melissa Gilbert, admitted stating that as a kid, she didn't know he sipped vodka from his coffee mug. But, quote, "I'm sure he's one reason why I almost always picked men who smelled like alcohol." Along with drinking and painkillers, he smoked 4 packs of unfiltered cigarettes a day, which likely influenced the onset of pancreatic cancer that eventually killed him. Sadly, he passed away at just 54 years old. Number 47. Dennis Price. A British actor who seemed to be fighting a battle within himself. In 1954, feeling the weight of a troubled marriage and his secret homosexuality, he tried to end it all with his head in the oven. Thankfully, a cleaning lady came in and saved the day. But that wasn't the end of his struggles. Price's relationship with alcohol was like a slow-motion train wreck. He'd start his day with a Guinness breakfast and ride that boozy train until the last call, often switching tracks to scotch. His co-stars spilled the tea, saying he'd show up with a bag full of booze and even stumbled onto a play's stage during Act 1, performing the finale. Sadly, as time went on, his dapper image got blurred by the bottle, and unsurprisingly, he died due to liver cirrhosis.
Thank you.
Number 48, Joan Crawford. The iconic actress hitched her star to the CEO of PepsiCo, and he made her the official Pepsi ambassador. Now imagine Joan swanning around the globe with her Pepsi cape on. But here's the kicker. At every stop, she had an alcohol wish list that could stock a mini bar for an army. 2/5 of Smirnoff, 1/5 of Old Forester bourbon, 1/5 of scotch, 1/5 of Beefeater gin, 2 champagne bottles, and a case of Pepsi. Yep, glad it's Pepsi. No Coke needed for this party. Number 49, Cary Grant. Now here's a twist in the Hollywood tale. The dashing Cary Grant, known for his suave roles, had a secret struggle with alcohol back in the day. Grant's doctor prescribed him LSD to cure his alcoholism. And guess what? He actually found joy in those mind-bending trips. He even introduced some of his pals to the psychedelic experience. Judy Balaban, daughter of a Paramount bigwig, quipped, quote, "If it was good enough for Cary Grant, it was good enough for me." Grant reportedly dropped acid about 100 times during his treatment. It seemed to have turned his life around. He lived happily until the age of 82. Number 50. Andre the Giant. Now here's a name that echoes through wrestling history. Andre the Giant, the colossal French wrestler, was known for his towering stature and impressive strength. 7.5 feet tall and weighing around 227 kilograms. But what set him apart from the rest was his legendary alcohol consumption. Despite his immense size, his love for alcohol was even bigger. Imagine downing around 7,000 calories of booze daily. There's a wild tale of him guzzling 119 bottles of beer in just 6 hours before collapsing under a tarpaulin. He once even stayed at a bar until 5 a.m., sipping on 40 vodka and tonics. With a whopping $40,000 bar bill after filming The Princess Bride, Andre's alcohol legacy was as massive as his frame. And there you have it, folks. The wild, untamed world of Hollywood's biggest boozers.
This is the real BS show, and that was some BS for you.
Yeah, crazy.
Kind of
right?
Long, but, you know, and it's kind of a who cares kind of thing, you know.
Yeah, I mean, some of it's crazy.
These people had everything in the world, and they just drank it up.
Well, how depressed were they? You know, that's the other problem. You don't know.
Well, you know, it's kind of like Al Capone, I mean, or, no, Elvis Presley.
Yeah.
I mean, they had all kinds of reasons why he took so many drugs. Well, he just loved them.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's the way these people are. They just love to drink, period. That's
great escape.
You know, you can come up with all kinds of other things, but they just love to do it. And
right.
What are you going to do? You know, I'm glad I never took up that habit.
No. Holy smokes. That's a dangerous habit.
I quit long, long time ago when I was playing in the bands and everything was free and... He said, "No, this is crazy. I'm just killing myself." You know?
Yeah, slowly. Yeah,
way long time ago that I figured that out, and I didn't miss it at all.
But now Bill likes his Coca-Cola.
Coca-Cola, yeah.
He likes the sugar cane Coca-Cola.
I mean, I like tomato juice and lemonade and other stuff.
V8, right? You like the V8?
Yeah, Coca-Cola is like kind of like people do with coffee. You know, first thing in the morning, just something to get you going.
That's the one right there. I'll admit that coffee is my passion, but there's days where I purposely don't drink it. Like on Thursdays, I don't drink it, like when we get together.
Oh, you don't want to talk too much on the radio?
I'd have to go to the bathroom a lot, you know, pee.
Oh, wow.
Because it makes me have to pee a lot. But the reality is, you know, I do purposely cut off, so I'm not like that dependent on coffee. Caffeine addiction is really nasty. I've had it before.
I never did like coffee. I like the smell of it.
Oh, yeah. Freshly ground coffee is amazing. That's what I do. I
used to wet my finger and put it in the coffee grounds and just stick it in my mouth. It was good. But I never liked coffee or tea. I don't know.
It's an acquired taste. There's a bitterness to it. But I personally like grinding my own coffee. There's something about that. I can do espressos. I do that occasionally at home. But mostly I just, grind my own coffee and I put it in a reusable Keurig thing and make my coffee and drink it black.
Well, it never made sense to me that if you can use alcohol to run your car. I mean, you know. The old way back when they used to, the farmers, they made their own alcohol and ran their tractors with it.
Yeah.
I said, well, that's kind of stupid. Why would you want to drink it and put it inside your body if it could explode? I don't know.
I can see where, you know, one of the concerns for me is, I will have a drink once in a while, but I don't get drunk. That's one of my rules. But my concern is I have a lot of alcoholics in my family. I recognize that's a dangerous game I'm playing with myself to get drunk and do it all the time and end up like an alcoholic. I don't want to risk that.
Well, that's what killed my dad. I mean, he was severe alcoholic.
It's a rough thing to see that.
Oh, it was just awful. I mean, just what my mom went through. I don't know how she ever did it.
Yeah, that's not fun.
Holy smokes!
And you only got one liver, man. So
yeah, well, that's one of the things that attacks big time. Cirrhosis of the liver kills a lot of people.
I think it's hepatitis C that can do it too. Because you can get if you're an alcoholic, you can get like hepatitis C or one of the hepatitises. I don't remember which one, but your liver can end up failing. And I never cared to go down that route. Now, of course, when I was younger, I probably drank more than when I was under 21 than after. I'm being honest with you.
I think a lot of people did.
And then later on, it's like, nah, I don't like getting drunk. The hangover. You know, the other thing that kind of cured me is, this is no joke, I remember reading, and this was in a scientific paper, and yes, I'm one of those weirdos that read scientific papers, but there's multiple ones on this. You can read up on it, where every time you get a hangover the next morning or whatever, that increases your risk of getting a seizure. And that's like, not cool with me. I don't like that idea. So I've always like realized I don't want to get a hangover ever again.
I used to tell my friends, I said, you must have had a good time. You're throwing up and just sick as a dog. I said, you must have really had fun last night. It's stupid. Unbelievably stupid.
So yeah, I think moderation.
Plus, you know, you can spend a lot of money. Oh, sure. I mean, my dad did. He spent, you know,
half his income.
Oh, jeez.
And I hate to say this.
We were poor.
But I hate to say this. You know, it's like, to me, it's like, I'd rather not waste that money. And I drink once in a while. I might have a beer or I might have a glass of whiskey. And that's rare, though. But I'm not getting drunk. But at the same time, I'm not going to go drinking or driving. I don't like that risk either. So
that's stupid. Yeah.
So, and for me, it's like, I've always thought, like, I want to be able to go anywhere I want, whenever I want. And if I'm drunk, I can't do that. So it's like, that's a kind of important too, you know?
Well, a lot of people don't figure it out. I don't know. Some people, it's an addiction and they just can't stop.
Yeah,
it's like smoking, you know?
Yeah.
It's just terrible.
It's a horrible addiction. And then the worst part about with alcoholism, if you're truly an alcoholic, you can't just quit right now because you'll die. You actually have to be weaned off of it at a certain way. And it's the healthiest way of doing it. So otherwise, you're going to get really messed up from it. And so there's programs out there that actually help alcoholics wean off alcohol. It's a horrible mess.
I'm glad I never had that problem. Yeah. I never had the desire to drink, really. Right. I just didn't like it.
It's kind of like the same thing with gambling. I never really had a desire to gamble, you know? I mean, there's some people who are highly addicted to gambling. It's disturbing to me.
Yeah.
I don't relate to it at all.
It's so easy to lose.
It's the same thing with alcohol in a way, you know, or drugs or anything like that. You know, it's like, in some ways, I can understand how it's a disease. The addiction part is a disease, and most people don't see it as a disease. They just think, oh, just why don't you just stop? And it's like, well, it's not that easy.
Yeah,
they're highly dependent on
it. It's like, stop eating, you know.
Right, right. That's how they view it. It's like, you know, when people smoke cigarettes. You know, I used to smoke, but I vape now. You still smoke. But I'm sure you've had people say, why don't you quit smoking? And it's like, well, it's not that easy. I quit smoking. And it's not easy. I had to eat baby carrots for a whole month. Like, I was not smoking. And I admit that every time I smelled a whiff of cigarette, I was there. And still occasionally I have that, but not as much anymore. You know, but nicotine's
My trick is I have a cigar and I don't inhale. That's what I told the doctor. So I don't inhale. He says, yeah, right. And he says, you got to stop. I says, yeah, right. So me and him don't see eye to eye. But
yeah.
But it's, I don't know. It's life's a crapshoot no matter what you do.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's just amazing. So let's you go in to play some music.
Yeah, and then we're done basically. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, that's it. We're at almost an hour and 20 minutes there.
Well, Merry Christmas to everybody. Yeah. Just in case we don't see you again.
Yeah, we should be. We'll be next week.
But, will we?
Okay. I think. Yeah.
When's Christmas?
Well, today's the 14th, so we have another.
11 days.
Yeah, 11 days. Geez, Bill, you're quick on that one.
Yeah, well, 14 from 25.
I know. I was looking at the calendar counting. You just took the 25 and minus the 14.
And you're the brains of this outfit here.
No, no, no. I program, and the programming does the math. I just make it do the math.
Wow. Well, anyways, thanks for being my friend, Seth.
Thank you for being my friend, too.
Thank you, Nancy, and just everybody have a Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas. Thank you.
never so pleasant about that face. Even your emotions had an echo in so much space. When you're out there without care, I was out of touch. It wasn't because I didn't know enough. I just knew too much. Does that make me crazy? Does that make me crazy? Does that make me crazy? Probably. And I hope that you are having the time of your life. Oh, but think twice. That's my only advice. You are. Oh, oh, bless your soul. Do you really think that you're in control? Well, I think you're crazy. I think you're crazy. I think you're crazy. Just like me, yeah. Well, my heroes have the heart to lose their lives out on a limb. And all I remember is thinking I wanna be like them. Ever since I was little, it looked like fun. It's no coincidence that I've come. I can die when I'm done. Baby, I'm